Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jim Roddy, your host for Heroes, and we are back from our break now and are going to talk to Eric Zarin. He is the president and chairman of the Andrew Carnegie Hero Fund Commission, and he has been telling stories about heroes that they have awarded since 1904, almost, 119 years that they've been doing this. Over 10,000 in the Canada and U.S. Eric, thanks for being with us again today, and we are looking forward to more of your stories.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Always a pleasure, and I'm enjoying myself going through some of these Western PA cases and really exceptional heroes from right here in our own hometowns and backyards. And good example is an Albert F. Wadowski, which is where we start today under file number 45690. This was in 1961. Albert Wadowski helped to save Donald C. Elliott following an explosion in Dravosburg, PA. It was in August of that year. At a steel mill, a violent gas explosion occurred at one of the mill units, which was engulfed briefly by a mass of flames 30 feet in diameter. Elliot, who was 40 at the time, was a mill recorder, and he was less than 10 feet away. He was severely burned and knocked into the unit's service pit, which was 10 feet deep and 7 feet wide. The flames, as much as 6 feet high, burned on the unit, and lesser flames spread to the pit. Wadowski, our hero, was 42. He was a general laborer at the steel mill. He ran 90 feet to the pit and saw Elliot, his clothing in shreds and his entire body blackened. He's standing 25 feet from the burning unit and 5 feet from the nearest flames. Now, fearing a possible second explosion or explosive spread of flames, Wadowski jumped down onto a roller carriage track, which extended lengthwise in the pit, and was 3.5 feet above the bottom. He dropped to his knees, reached downward, and grasped Elliot under the armpits, but he was unable to lift him. At Wadowski's call for assistance, a John Polka, who was also recognized by the commission, jumped down onto the track from where he took hold of Elliot's legs. The flame conditions at the unit and in the pit remained the same. Between them, Wadowski and Polka lifted Elliot and, standing erect, raised him over their heads. Two other workmen then drew Elliot onto the mill floor, after which Wadowski and Polka climbed out of the pit. Plant firemen arrived, extinguished the flames. Other men nearby, when the explosion occurred, recover from their burns, but Elliot sadly died 5 days after the accident. And you and I, Jim, we've covered now in these hero stories a number of different situations in steel mills and other dangerous places where Western Pennsylvanians made their living from many years ago up until recent times. And it's just a reminder of how dangerous it used to be and continues to be, but how, you know, selflessly and immediately co-workers will take care of and go after their fellows.
Well, there's so many ways that you can have an accident, but it seems that in Western Pennsylvania and West Virginia and Ohio, the location of steel mills, which were very dangerous places, coal mines, obviously have been famous for accidents. A lot of rivers, drowning and people getting into trouble on a river that's flowing. So, you know, there's multiple reasons. And, of course, automobiles and highways are common everywhere. And so all of those combined have really created a number of opportunities where you can have these accidents. Well, I'd like to ask you a question about your governing body. You have a board of directors, and they are mostly Southwestern Pennsylvania board members. I'm sure you probably have some that are perhaps out of town, but tell us about how they function and the role that they play at the Carnegie Hero Fund.
Well, we have a board of 21 members, and 21 is the original number set by Andrew Carnegie in 1904. So the number remains the same. They're mostly, you know, business and civic leaders from the Pittsburgh area, but with some notable exceptions. We have very proud to have a great granddaughter of Andrew Carnegie who lives outside of the area as a member of the board. But really the entire range, as you can imagine, we have people from the legal profession, from the business profession, from government, from the private sector. We have pilots. We have medical doctors. We have folks that really provide an array of background, expertise, and experiences so that we can really evaluate these cases, in all cases objectively, but with some understanding of, you know, the perils that were faced and in comparison to our awarding requirements, which, you know, clearly it remains our guide after almost 119 years and have changed very little through the years, although they have changed to keep up with modern times and changes within society. But we look at you know, whether or not a hero recognizes that a victim is and indeed is in danger of losing his or her life and act without obligation to do so, usually from a point of safety and usually in saving a stranger. And if they undertake, you know, that severe life risk themselves, or at a minimum risk to extreme injury to themselves, but extraordinary peril to themselves in acting to save a victim when they are under no obligation to do so. And we look at that moral choice that is made and to make that sacrifice and to take that risk and what it means within the larger context of our society and how we can and should, when we're at our best, you know, relate to one another and the value in which we should place another human life.
And so these heroes, their story is presented to the board, and the board discusses it and makes a decision about whether or not to make the award. Is that the process?
That's exactly right. So we glean all of these nominations either from direct nominations, so someone tells the commission about someone's heroic act, or we scrub media reporting on heroic rescues, on life-saving acts, on heroism. And so that's kind of how the process starts. And we start to compile information and details and facts about each rescue and the principles involved. So the staff does a great job, you know, vetting at that level, conducting a thorough investigation of acts which may qualify for the award, and then putting it all together for the board members, which convene four times a year to discuss and sometimes debate and you know, make the ultimate awarding decisions in these cases as to who will receive the Carnegie Medal for Heroism. And then it's a continuing process thereafter in terms of awardees of the medal that may qualify for some of the benefits that Mr. Carnegie, you know, brought into the responsibilities of the commission to govern, so that heroes, or in posthumous cases, their dependents not suffer, and that they're supported in daily life after making that moral choice to place themselves in danger.
Well, in 119 years, you must have had a lot of members that have been on your board if you keep 21 on the board all the time. So how often do the boards turn over? Do people have a term that they serve, or can they serve as longer than some others?
Yeah, I mean, no term limit in place at the moment, nor there has there ever been one. So and I think it says a lot about the commission. We don't have a whole lot of turnover, and folks stick around for a long time. I think the longest serving member was well over 50 years. You know, they love considering these cases, learning about the heroes that are involved, in some cases meeting them or awarding the Carnegie Medal. And I think they would express what I express every day in my work and my exposure to those same aspects of human nature. It really lifts you up, and it really does give you hope, and it makes you feel a little bit better about the state of our society and how well we take care of one another.
Oh, since you started telling these stories, I have been really inspired by the fact that we've had so many of these in southwestern Pennsylvania, and so many of them right here in Pittsburgh. I think the first one was from Wilkinsburg, is that right, in 1904?
That's exactly right.
Wow.
That's exactly right. We talked about him on the first episode.
And we just talked to, I guess a week or so ago, we talked to a young man that was from Pittsburgh that saved someone just recently, and that was interesting also.
Two important numbers I'll throw out, Jim, is that it's that 20% that's the percentage of posthumous awards that we make. So 20% of the time we award a medal to a hero who has lost his or her life in the effort, and we only award about 10% of the nominated acts. So that's a relatively small percentage that actually meet our strict awarding requirements. Now, that's not to say every one of those nominated cases are, with very few exceptions, they are all heroic acts. They're all life-saving acts, but we have to compare it to our very strict criteria. But, you know, we look at, if you look at 10 times the awarded number, we've looked at many thousands of nominated acts and plenty of heroes from which we can draw hope, I think, you know, for our future.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Eric Zarin. He is the president and chairman of the Andrew Carnegie Hero Fund Commission. We'll be back next week, ladies and gentlemen, with more wonderful stories on heroes.